Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leader Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas. So I'm back. I'm doing a one-man show. Gabriel Montoya is at the Burning Man Festival or event or whatever you want to call that, right? But anyways, hey, everybody that's been pledging on our Patreon to keep us rolling and going, I want to thank very, very much. It's much appreciated. Every dollar counts with us, so thank you very much for everything that's being donated to us on our Patreon. If you haven't yet, hey, see if you can. If you can't, no worries. We're always going to come around and talk boxing here on the Leaving the Ring Network. Again, I'm your host, Dave Duenas. So let's get down rolling to it. This past Saturday at the StubHub Arena at 154 limit, you had Miguel Cotto versus Yoshihiro Kamagai. Okay, so let's get right to it. You know, I had said on the last week podcast that Miguel Cotto obviously was going to have to use his legs. He was going to have to box. Was he going to make this into a fight? And you know what? We end up getting a fight. The only thing that was evident was that Kamagai just couldn't catch Miguel Cotto. In the first round, you have to admit, it almost seemed like we were heading to the route of Antonio Margarito all over again for Miguel Cotto. Kamagai's a big kid. I mean, you just saw the size difference. He was just massive. So any shots that Cotto was landing in that first round, he kind of walked through it, and he started landing some pretty big hits himself. Kamagai, he started landing some good uppercuts, started throwing his right hand, and he was tagging and touching Miguel Cotto, forcing him to try to box backwards. The thing is the world-class Miguel Cotto showed his experience. He ended up adjusting. He ended up giving Kamagai different angles, different looks, and wherever, you know, Kamagai tried to cut the ring off, Miguel was able to use better footwork to get out of there and, you know, give himself the opportunity to counterpunch. So it kind of ended up like that all the way through. The thing about Kamagai, and I think everybody agrees, all over social media, every single boxing fan that tuned in on Saturday, is Kamagai, he's got a Godzilla of a chin. There's no question about that. I mean, he was taking some big hellacious shots from Miguel Cotto. Now, granted, Miguel Cotto is not a big puncher at 154, unless you're damaged goods. You know, he showed, though, that he's consistent with his punches. And even with the consistency, he was landing numerous shots, headshots. Kamagai was, you know, taking them, chewing them up, and spinning it out, and still continue to move forward. So that being said, I got to tell you this. I don't care what anybody says. I want to see Kamagai back on HBO, okay? I think that the guy comes to fight, the guy can take a big shot, and, you know, he doesn't give up. There was no retreat in his game. Now, granted that his game plan wasn't that great, you know, didn't really seem to know how to cut off the ring, didn't seem to know how to take a step outside of him going forward to make Cotto think a little bit, you know, quicker so he can make some mistakes. Kamagai just kept coming, and his chin held up, and that's pretty much what kept him into the fight. So, like I said, like to see Kamagai again. You know, he's a tough, tough hombre. I just used that. Did I just say that? Oh, my God. He's a tough, tough guy. I'm going to shoot myself in a minute for saying that. He's a really tough guy. So I think anybody from the 147 to 254 limit, you know, Kamagai's the guy you're going to test yourself with whether or not you belong in that division. Now, you know, who's next for him? I don't know. I don't know that many folks that are going to want to step in with Kamagai. I mean, you're going to look good, and you're going to land some heavy shots, but the strong possibility is you might get tired out landing on that iron chin of Kamagai. So I don't know. I'm not sure some fighters want to step in there that are moving from 147, but definitely the people that are at 154, they're going to want to tangle with this kid because it's going to be a good fight. And you know what? Fight fans are going to come out just on the name and hearing that Kamagai is going to be back in the ring. Now, as I've seen it right now in social media and in our Leaving the Ring Gmail, The only fight, and hear this before I even get into that. Freddie Roach, after the fight on their post interview with Max Kellerman, he said they want the winner of Canelo and a Triple G, which would be in November, because Miguel Cotto is already saying he's going to retire. And it looks like he's going to stay true to his word. So I'm not sure if that's going to happen, because it may be too soon. Or like some fight fans are saying, it might be suicide. You know, if he takes on the winner between those two, Canelo and Triple G, Gennady Golovkin. So right now, like I said, what I'm seeing through social media and through our Leaving the Ring Gmail is the only fighter that fans around the world right now that want to see Miguel Cotto step in the ring with, if it is the November date, would be David Lemieux, the Canadian, the big puncher. And you know what? I would love to see that fight too. I'm just not quite sure that Cotto and Roach would want that fight, because you know what? David Lemieux still is a good puncher. He's improved a whole lot. He did lose to Triple G, but he was out-jabbed and out-boxed. Now, that leaves room for Miguel Cotto and Freddie Roach to look at and say, hey, we could probably do similar to what Triple G did. The only thing is his size. You know, is David Lemieux is a big middleweight. So would he have to come down to face Miguel Cotto? And because the fact that Freddie Roach had said that they're willing to face the winner of Triple G and Canelo, are they talking about that they're solid in fighting at 160 and not 154? So those are some of the tangibles that they got to work out, okay? Because if I remember correctly, David Lemieux doesn't want to move down. He's comfortable. And rightfully so, his power is at 160. Why drain yourself? Why set yourself up for defeat when you're comfortable and you can fight at the weight limit that you're at? So that's something that Miguel Cotto and his team are going to have to look at. If I know Freddie Roach is going to fight for every little bit of an advantage. If any of those three names right now are mentioned or are willing to step in the ring with Miguel Cotto. Like I said, Canelo, Triple G, don't see that happening. But David Lemieux, why not? It's a big fight. It's an intriguing fight. And guess what? It's a great farewell fight for Miguel Cotto, because it's such a risk. It's a risk fight. It's not one of these fights that he's going to have the over advantage. I don't think a lot of fight fans are going to be, I think anything, everybody's going to be split down the middle and who thinks he wins that fight. So great, great fight between those two. Okay, so Miguel Cotto wins, and right now what we're seeing is on Mikey Garcia, who just recently defeated Adrian Broder on his Twitter handler, is that he's saying himself and Miguel Cotto. I don't know if it's a joke. I don't know if he's very serious about it, but I got to tell you this. Would it generate a buzz among fans? Absolutely. But I think this is a major gamble. And because the fact that we didn't really see the power at 140 against Adrian Broner, I don't think we're going to see anything at 154. And, you know, Mikey Garcia, which was pointed out to me by a few fans, looked a little pudgy. So if he looked pudgy at 140, how is he going to look at 154? I think, you know what, sometimes you just got to sit back and look at reality. I think what he needs to do is concentrate at 135 and then still continue to play with that 140 limit. Jumping up two weight classes above your debut of 140, to me, just doesn't make any business sense. And I know he's looking for big paydays, but right there and then, you are looking for a big payday. Are you really looking for your legacy? Maybe so, but that is a dangerous, dangerous risk. Kudos if he gets it, and kudos if he tries it. You can't knock him for it, but you can definitely say it wasn't the smartest move. Ronnie Rios, I got to tell you this. Ronnie Rios was on the undercard. There's another kid that I truly, truly enjoyed watching. You know, here's the thing with Ronnie Rios. That was also at the StubHub against Ray Vargas. On BoxRec, they got Ronnie Rios scheduled as 5'7", and Ray Vargas at 5'7.5". There's no way. because you saw definitely the height difference, okay? And you also, what you saw in that fight with Ronnie Rios against Vargas was that he was kind of memorized on the height difference, okay? He was trying to catch him with an overhand right. He was trying to headhunt. He was trying to make something up there with a jab and trying to reach Vargas. The thing that I truly enjoyed about Ronnie Rios' corner was they were telling him everything that you're supposed to tell a fighter, which is the truth. Forget the head. Go to the body. Get in the inside. Push him back. You saw that when Ray Vargas was getting pushed back, he wasn't really able to keep Ronnie Rios off of him. So it was Rios' opportunity to capitalize on Vargas because Vargas had his spurts. He had his first, second, I believe in his third round, he was landing some hellacious shots. But after he saw that he couldn't really crack anything in the chin of Ronnie Rios, he kind of backed up and he started doing a lot of pity-pat shots, okay? And then that's when Rios kind of picked it up. But it was a little too late in the fight because it seemed that Vargas had already had a major league, lead on the scorecards. And he definitely did use his legs a lot better. He definitely had better ring generalships than Rios. But what Rios had his moments. And it was hard not to root for Rios because he was a smaller guy. And he was definitely outclassed by the better boxer. But Rios' heart showed. And I think it shined on the HBO telecast. So I'd like to see Ronnie Rios. Now, Ray Vargas, I may be one of the few that was... I was impressed in the beginning, but later when it kind of just went into the fight on those later rounds, honestly, I just kind of fell off of not being so impressed. I kind of watched that. He has a lot to work on. Is it something that Team Vargas would want to revisit with Ronnie Rios? I'm going to tell you, they're going to probably say no. They're going to opt and say hell no, because he is a tough customer. And, Ronnie wasn't there to take the receipt. He was there to cash out. And you saw how the way he fought in those late rounds. And you saw that his team was really trying to give him the formula. The only thing was is that he couldn't mix it up to make the potion. So do you think he'd go back to the drawing board and look at the mistakes he did and how slow he started and how memorized he was on the height? And it shouldn't have been that way, that he should have been memorized on the body so the head would have came down and the hands would have came down and then his jab would have been effective? I would say absolutely yes, because the team knew the adjustments they needed to do to beat Ray Vargas. All right, so that's enough of that there. Now, the big fight that's happening in September 9th, we all know this. If you're a hardcore boxing fan or if you're an MMA fan just tuning in to Leaving the Ring, we're going to speak on the big fight. The real fight for this year of 2017 is Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin. Okay, at 160, this is the fight that fans and everyone around the world that loves combat sports have been waiting for. Now, the thing, though, that I like to point out, because I do get a lot of emails about this, and I see this on social media, is can we still call Canelo a ducker? I mean, he did sign the fight. And I've had some fans go like, well, Dave, he had to fight him. No, he didn't. I mean, have you watched his career? This guy could fight Mickey Mouse, and everybody would still give Mickey Mouse, his Canelo fans would still go, well, it's Mickey Mouse. He has a chance and stuff. He does wear gloves 24/7. You know what I mean? He could fight anybody. So it wouldn't matter if he opt not to take on Gennady Golovkin. I think from the beginning, when people were calling him, they were saying that he was scared. I had said this a few times, was that I don't think he's scared. I think his promotional group, Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya and them, they understood that, this is our cash cow. We got to kind of season him up a little bit, get him ready before we send him out to the wolves. And they did exactly that. They did what a promoter's supposed to do. Let the fight marinate. Now, they didn't let it over-marinate the way Pacquiao and Floyd did, and we're all happy for that. So to say that Canelo's still a ducker, it's kind of funny because he's not ducking Triple G anymore. That can be taken away. To me, the focus now is to talk about the strategy plans. What are they going to bring to the table? Who's got the stronger points on certain combinations and movement? Who has this? Those are the things I think that need to be focused out. So to answer some people's questions and all that, should we still be, you know, should we still be calling Canelo Alvarez a ducker? No, absolutely not. I think you got to give your due. And you know, everybody knows this about me here on Leaving the Ring, Dave Duenas, is that I've never been a really major fan of Canelo Alvarez. I've always questioned it. I didn't like the tactics of matching. It really was, to me, was following the roadmap of Floyd Mayweather. But he has faced some of the best in his division, okay? Now, and then he's kind of tarnished it by facing guys that he shouldn't have faced, that he knew that it was more for a showcase and a KO reel than really to kind of up his stardom or his ability to jump up in weight and to show that he could dominate that weight division. Because the big question still for me, and I think for a lot of fight fans, is Canelo ready at 160 to take a 160-pound puncher? Could he handle the pressure of a big guy? Because Julio Cesar Chavez opted not to show any of that and left us with those questions still waiting to be answered. So this past Saturday on the other universe of networks, we had on at the MGM Las Vegas with Floyd Money Mayweather versus the notorious Conor McGregor on a pay-per-view Showtime telecast. Now, this is something that we just got to take a better look at because as some of you saw on my Twitter, you know, I was pointing out some things, and I got to tell you, I even had some fans of Leaving the Ring email me saying, why am I taking the time to argue with MMA fans or listening to them, okay? So on this one here, I got a lot of points to point out, okay? So we're going to go inside the gloves. First off, I want to tell you this. The difference between UFC fans and MMA fans, mixed martial art fans, is the mixed martial art fans understand the rules of boxing. They understand that boxing and MMA are apples and oranges, completely different sports. The UFC fans don't seem to know how to comprehend that. And the reason I'm saying that is because you see the reaction of them saying that the fight was stopped too soon. The guy never touched the canvas. You know, Conor McGregor never touched the canvas. You don't need to touch the canvas, you morons. What happened is that he wasn't returning shots after in the 10th round and really starting the 9th round where you saw that he was getting, I mean, just getting hit too much. That I thought that the ref let it go to see what happens in that 10th round. See if he got a second wind. Maybe got some, you know, oxygen back in his lungs and he comes out. But immediately, you saw that he was gassed. He wasn't ready. He went out there and Floyd capitalized on that. Okay? So you don't need to touch the canvas. What you do need to do, though, for the UFC fans to understand this, is you got to keep your hands up. Protect yourself at all times. And also, if you want to stay in the fight, you got to show something. You got to return a shot. So the whole theory of you guys saying, he never touched the canvas. Go back to the rules of boxing. As a matter of fact, go watch some boxing matches. You know, if anything, the referee is being merciful. He had a guy that was debuting in a pro boxing professional fight. And against what you guys keep saying, the best in our generation. Which brings me to another point. Point number two, Floyd is being called the best of our generation, that Conor McGregor fought and was competitive with the best defense fighter of our generation and the best boxer of our generation. I've heard both of those, okay, both of those, you know, pointed out, all right? Then in the same breath, they said that Floyd looked old, that if there was a rematch, Conor McGregor would knock him out. Now, this is where I have a problem because you got a lot of these idiots that host on Fox Sports and ESPN. You got the Skip Bayless and the Stephen A. Smith and all these other morons that should have no right. They should be fined every time they open their mouths about boxing, okay? You can't have both. It's either he fought the best of our generation, and that's plain and simple, or he fought an old Floyd. Because then when you add on to that, in the same breath, that Conor McGregor could fight any of the best fighters in boxing. Well, if he was fighting an old Floyd and he was getting his ass handed to him, what do you think a prime, active fighter that hasn't been away from the sport 2 years would do to a Conor McGregor? Right? Doesn't that make more sense? So you can't have both, okay? And then here's the other thing. Saying that he's the greatest. Well, I got to tell you this, man. I don't even think Floyd believes that. I think he's always been scared to be great. And what I mean by that is if you look at his resume, he retired once. He avoided when the welterweights were really deep. When he had Miguel Cotto, Paul Williams, Antonio Margarito, Shane Mosley, Manny Pacquiao. You had all these guys fighting to be the superior welterweight at that time. He decided to come back when everybody fought each other. Joshua Kalali was in the mix. He decided, I'm going to come back because everybody fought each other and everybody had defeated each other. And he decided to come back and fight Juan Manuel Marquez. He avoided Manny for 5 years. He has avoided, after promising Antonio Margarito that after I fight Oscar De La Hoya, I'll fight you. He avoided that fight. After, you know, the timing for fighting Shane Mosley, he avoided that fight. Floyd, this is the thing. And I was telling a couple of fans this as well. Floyd is the greatest matchmaker in our generation. He understands the business of boxing. So that makes him, that gives him the lead. And that's why he's able to do these certain things. Now, if he was the greatest, why did he come back and want to face Conor McGregor, who had no resume in boxing? If you're looking to be great and daring to be great, don't you try to call for the guys like, you know, Spence or say, hey, I want to fight the winner of Canelo and Triple G. He flirted with 154. You don't think any of those guys, again, especially Canelo, would say, dude, I'll go back to 154. You don't think Triple G, looking at a big payday, go, I'll go back to 154. But instead, he chose Conor McGregor. Okay, now, going back, because I went sidetrack here, about the whole Conor McGregor did better than any other boxer. Again, matchmaking does wonders. Again, like you guys said, Floyd looked old. Me, I'm going to give you my theory. Floyd didn't really train for this fight. He knew what he had. He knew that on his worst night that he was going to beat this kid. You know, and anybody that was smart enough, which were the hardcore boxing fans, we knew this too. We understood that he was going to try to walk him down. And I even said this in our last podcast, that it would be Conor McGregor running in the late rounds. And guess what? He started running. I even said that the possibility of him getting knocked out in the ninth round should happen. Why? Because it would be an insult for Floyd not to do for boxing. And that's what we end up getting. Got the 10th round. He ended up stopping him, okay? Now, was timing off? Absolutely. He's been off 2 years. But to sit there and insult the fighters that been there, that fought actually the top grade Floyd Mayweather, and say that Conor McGregor did better than them, that's insulting. Because here's the thing. Floyd took those guys serious. He didn't take Conor McGregor serious. He knew that what he had in front of him was a novice, and that brought a lot of money and fans, UFC fans, took advantage of it. And that's exactly what happened. So when you sit there, and you're going to try to throw numbers like, well, look at the numbers, like 111 or all this other crap. Well, I guess we're counting the little pity pass that he landed as well. Guys, watch the fight. The guy doesn't know how to turn on his punches. Hammer fisting doesn't count. He had movement, but he didn't even know what to do with that movement. Occasionally, he had some good counter shots, but nothing came from behind that. You know, because he's used to throwing one shot at a time. Andre Bertel would have probably had a better success with the way that Floyd fought tonight. Would have probably landed more in big shots. So to sit there and insult the fighters that face Floyd, you got to be kidding me. Jose Luis Castillo, you're telling me the first fight with Floyd Mayweather did worse than Conor McGregor? Shane Mosley that rocked him in the second round did worse? Conor McGregor did better than him? Are you kidding me? Zab Judah did worse? Conor McGregor did better? That's insane. Even Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who couldn't let his hands go. So don't sit there and say he did better. He got stopped. TKO. He didn't go all the way 12 rounds. He got stopped. The other guys like Berto, Guerrero, Madonna, and the list goes on, didn't get stopped. And you know what? Let me tell you this too. Let me point this out really quick, because I saw this on ESPN, Fox Sports, even fight fans hitting me up on the Leaving the Ring Gmail. Now that Conor McGregor's got a taste of real money, the dead sport that he needed to go to get a major payday, because this is what the UFC fans are saying, that boxing's dead. This is the reason why boxing's dead, because they, you know, their guy got TKO'd on the 10th round. Funny, right? You go to a dead sport to get your biggest payday. Makes no sense. Their logic is this. Wow. It's out there. But you got the cheerleaders that are now sitting there going, well, he may have a career in boxing. He may stick around. Now, Dana White is like, no, let's go back to the UFC. But the reality is that Conor McGregor got a taste of real cash. And guess what? There are fans, and still UFC fans, that are going to be duped into believing he can be competitive with the Canelos of the world, the Triple G's, the Thurmans, and all these other guys, right? The Spence, right? So should he stick around? I tell you what, for shits and giggles, let him stick around. I actually would want to see him get back into the ring. Why? So that the UFC fans and these stupid commentators that are getting paid to be cheerleaders and not talk real truth can shut up after the guy gets stopped. And really stopped. Because the one thing is he got stopped by a pillow puncher. A guy that's not known to be a puncher. A guy that's not known to come forward. A guy that's been known to be a defense whiz. The only thing is, this is what's hilarious. Guys like myself and guys that tune into the Leaving the Ring Network, guys that tune into the next round, knew that Floyd was going to fight a different fight. Because the opportunity was there. The cookie jar lid was open for him to put his hand in there. The only ones that didn't seem to see the scam coming were the casual fans and the UFC fans. Not the MMA fans. I want to separate that. I apologize if I keep saying MMA, you know, even through Twitter and our social media. It's the UFC fans. Because like I said, the MMA fans seem to understand. No, not seem. They understand that boxing and mixed martial arts is apple and oranges. It's different. So should we see, or with open arms, brace Conor McGregor, the Notorious, in boxing? He's already got his debut. He's already got his resume with UFC fans and casual fans. And they've already been brainwashed and duped into believing this guy can be competitive with some of the top 10 fighters in the boxing world, in the boxing universe. Let him go at it. Let him understand that the people that are giving him the kudos and the people that are celebrating his performance past Saturday are actual people that don't watch the sport of boxing. They don't watch it. Even Michael Rappaport, the guy that's over there, you know, going off on Conor McGregor like Conor McGregor stole his girlfriend. He don't watch it enough. All these celebrities, they don't watch boxing enough. So, Conor McGregor, Notorious, please, notoriously, come back in the boxing. So all this debate that you had the best success than any fighter that Floyd Mayweather faced can be shut down by you being knocked out in 3 or 4 rounds with a Triple G, Saul Canelo Alvarez, a Miguel Cotto, David Lemieux, even with an Errol Spence. Anyways, I'm your host, Dave Duenas. This is Leaving the Ring. I will see you guys back next week. Don't drink and drive.
Ladies and gentlemen, until then, you guys have a good one.